Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for joining us on this hour of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. We're going to begin by talking with Dr. John Brukalski. I spoke with him some time ago, and some of you might recall his story, but it's an outstanding story about his life as a doctor. As an OBGYN, from the moment of his training, no less, he was taught to believe, and he actually considered, abortion to be a form of health care. And he was stalwart about it as well. That actually changed when one night he was caught between trying to save the life of one unborn baby and also simultaneously being called to bring about the cessation of the life of another. Our Lady of Guadalupe intervened in his life and plays a key role in his story. And now, John stands as one of the strongest voices for life in the womb and for a consistent ethic of life to be practiced amongst practitioners of medicine in the United States and in the world. And so he joins us today to share that story. We go on from there to speak with Jason West, Jacques Maritain. Without a doubt, this person, Jacques Maritain, was regarded as one of the most prominent Catholic intellectuals during his lifetime. He is also remembered as a very strong voice, a spokesperson for the revival of Thomism. And so the entire movement that we call the Neo-Thomist movement, quite a bit of it can be traced in terms of trajectory to the work of Jacques Maritain. His philosophy and his philosophical insight was also essential in the development of what we now remember as the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. I did a commentary yesterday on how the Universal Declaration of Human Rights was one of the last historical appeals of the global populace to the fact that man should be held accountable to a moral system that is greater than himself and therefore doesn't come from himself. In other words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is a subtle declaration that God exists, that he cares about human existence and flourishing, and that he has ordained a natural law moral system to govern the processes and life of man in society. Jacques Maritain contributed to that thought. We talk about that with Jason West. For now, let's take a look at the headlines.
Thank you, Marcus, and good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Thursday, December 11th. It's the feast of Pope St. Damasus I. And today's news is brought to you by Visiting Angels, providing loving care and assistance for seniors in need at visitingangels.com. The Senate has failed to pass both the GOP and Democratic health care bills as the Obamacare countdown clock winds downward. The Affordable Care Act subsidies expire at the end of the year, and if that happens, about 22 million Americans will see a spike in premiums. GOP House leaders are working on a health care package, and the White House says President Trump will roll out a new approach on health care very soon. The alleged Charlie Kirk assassin is in court currently in Utah. Tyler Robinson has been charged with fatally shooting Kirk on September 10th during an outdoor rally. The 22-year-old is being charged with aggravated murder and has not entered a plea. Today's appearance in a Utah courtroom is his first in-person court appearance. Time magazine is naming the architects of AI as its person of the year. Time's editor-in-chief said this year, no one had a greater impact than the individuals who imagined, designed, and built AI. One of two special covers features an illustration of a group of AI executives sitting on a beam that recalls the famous Lunch Atop a Skyscraper photograph. And a new Pew report says Americans' long slide in religious affiliation may be leveling off, with about 70% of adults still identifying with a faith since 2020. But younger Americans remain far less religious, with only 55% claiming a religion, and the share of Nuns has nearly doubled since 2007, rising from 16% to 31%. From the AveMariaRadio.net news desk, I'm Dan McGraw.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mark Speter. During his training as an OBGYN, Dr. John Brukalski was taught to believe that abortion was healthcare. That changed when one night he found himself caught between a rock and a hard place. He had to save the life of an unborn child and at the same time was called to end the life of another unborn child. Our Lady of Guadalupe proved to be a pivotal instrument in his journey and story into now becoming a stalwart advocate for life in the womb. He joins us today. John is the author of Two Patients, My Conversion from Abortion to Life-Affirming Medicine, and published by Ignatius Press. John, great to speak with you again. How are you?
Oh, Marcus, I'm so well. Great to be with you on the eve of this incredible feast day.
That's precisely why we reached out to you. I know that this feast day has a tremendous significance for you. And before we go on any further, I want to invite you to tell your story. But just before that, one of the things that really marks your life, John, it comes out in your writings and the last time we spoke, is a real joy for life and the joy of the gospel. Can you please speak to how that has come into your life since you embraced the dignity of the human person and life in the womb?
Oh, sure. It obviously, when you have been touched by mercy, the whole experience and engagement with our Lord in yourself and then loving others as yourself, knowing that I'm beloved so I can love, hate disease, but love medicine, but love the patient, that is overwhelming. You can't go back. You're no longer the same person. You've been touched by mercy. And after practicing medicine now at Tepeyac OBGYN and Divine Mercy Care for over 25 to 30 years, you see how the healing presence of Jesus Christ combines with the best of modern medicine on a day-to-day basis to bring real freedom and real joy and healing, health, and wholeness, integration into those who I see, as well as into myself and the rest of our staff. That's what just fills you, so to speak, Marcus.
I thank you for sharing that, because I can only imagine how that resonates with many people listening right now. And so that paves the way for us to hear you share your story of how you found yourself to be where you are. But please begin by telling us about your formation as a medical professional and the things you were taught about abortion.
Sure. You know, I'm a 65-year-old man. I've practiced OBGYN for decades, 30. I mean, you know, 30 years. And I went to one of the most premier reproductive medicine centers in the nation in Norfolk, Virginia. We were the home of the first IVF test tube baby in this country. So we were on the cutting edge of what reproductive health care is. And I listened to my female friends who demanded health and happiness through autonomy, equality, and sexual liberty. And so medicine bought that approach, and abortion was just part of contracept from 15 to 50, only come off when you wanted a child, continue back on contraception by turning off the brain for that entire time, and then continue on hormones in the older years of one's life. This is what was taught to myself, but also it was bought by women in the vast majority. And if you failed contraception, abortion was a solution. If you couldn't get pregnant, you immediately bypassed the causes, the root issues, and you immediately proceeded with in vitro fertilization, where you began to make excess embryos because the process is so inefficient and dysfunctional, and you began to freeze embryos. So embryos, the embryologic early life, sadly, was no longer loved as it's supposed to be. It was just wanted and owned. Did you love it or did you own it? Were they your property or were they your children? Well, they're your property. Because in order to do all this, and then you had to then buy into this trap, this lie, and it really would split a lot of the dysfunction I see in my patients, as well as in our profession, is this kind of this break within where good and evil run through the human heart. Women who have been hurt by decades of contraception feeling as if they've been shut off because it affects, it turns off the pituitary gland. It's a power grab. It's big pharma. You're getting rid of disease by shutting off, not collaborating and cooperating with the person in front of you who's, you know, incredibly wonderfully made. And so if the child is not wanted, you then must perform the abortions or refer for them first, second, and third trimester, which is very brutal. We now have chemical abortions that where we were just beginning to learn about that when I was in residency from 87 to 91. And we were using RU486. We were doing chemical abortions at the time, studying them. And we were also doing eugenic abortions. And then if you didn't want children, then we sterilized you. It was power and aggression and violence in a woman's reproductive life, which then flowed into her relationships. Because two become one flesh, it's a family dynamic. It's a relational issue. And so I found myself in that world trying to help people and realizing that I was the one beginning to break within. And it was that night on labor and delivery where one woman wanted a baby at little over halfway of her pregnancy versus the woman in the next room, same diagnosis, early labor, same time, she wanted to get rid of it. And in one room, I was saving the child. In the other room, there, I aborted the child, and it was a failed abortion. It was alive. And because it was over a certain weight, I had to call in the neonatal doctors, the high-risk doctors, to resuscitate this child. Both children went on to live, but it was the witness of that Catholic NICU doctor who looked at me and said, you need to have coffee with me in the morning. You're better than this. So it was the data coming in between abortion and breast cancer, abortion and mental illness, abortion and preterm birth, which we never told our patients about. I was beginning to have students and women regret their decisions of contraception and abortion and sterilization and freezing their babies, their embryos. There was beginning to spread, and then with the data, it was the experience of patients. My heart was hardening. I felt it inside. And yet it was this doctor that witnessed to me. And she was the one said, she said, you need to find Jesus. And because I grew up in a great Catholic Bible strong family, Our Lady of Guadalupe, Fatima, Lourdes were part of my life. And I went on a pilgrimage with my mother and found mercy.
John, we had running out of time in this segment. I'm really grateful that you told us that story in an overarching way. And we're going to continue this story on the other side of the break. I'm talking with Dr. John Brukalski. He tells the story of how, as a doctor, he was trained with what he has rightly described as a disparate moral ethic between life in the womb, whether it's chosen or not. As if the choice to love the child determines whether that is a real child or something to be owned and manipulated. And on the other side, we're going to talk about how that kind of a moral dichotomy affects the psyches of medical professionals and what it does to the medical industry, the practice at large. And also, John's own journey into deeper love of life in the womb with Our Lady of Guadalupe. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
Support for this Ave Maria radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
Life can be overwhelming, leaving you feeling anxious, alone, or even in despair. That's why the nonprofit Revive app was created, to help you navigate the darkness and discover the light. With Revive, confidential conversations with a certified spiritual companion are always just a tap away. And right now, your first two sessions are free. Download the Revive app today. That's R-E-V-I-V, and then the number 3. Let them help you find joy in tomorrow.
Wishing you a blessed Advent and a Merry Christmas from St. Paul Street Evangelization. The new year brings new vision and new plans to drive our mission forward, to train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples for the urgent work of evangelization. Will you give a year-end gift to lead more souls to Christ in 2026? All donations up to a total of $20,000 will be matched through December 31st. Visit streetevangelization.com/donate to give today. That's streetevangelization.com/donate.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter, speaking with Dr. John Bukalski, author of Two Patients, My Conversion from Abortion to Life-Affirming Medicine. John, you shared with us your story in a nutshell earlier. I want to dive into one of the first things that you highlighted. Could you please share with us what that moral break, that dichotomy, does to medical practitioners, let alone the women involved in this? Because on the one hand, you take an oath, you swear an oath to do no harm. And on the other hand, you understand that this life is only precious if it's chosen to be so. That has to do something to the psyche.
Oh, it absolutely does, Marcus. And that's really the key, because people don't fully realize the brutality of the procedure for the person providing it, but also to the woman who's receiving it and the family. You know, the body, and it's also a body, psyche, and soul brutality. Bodies of these young unborn children develop bones with calcium right at the end of the first trimester into the second, you know, 12 to 20 weeks. And so once there's calcium, you have to dismember the body. And that is a brutal thing to do for both the patient and the doctor, the practitioner, because we know what's happening. And so when the child gets older, we give chemicals to turn off the heart before it's born, because the intention of the abortion is a dead born child. That's the intention that the CDC, the science, recognizes. And you realize slowly but surely, because you start very early and you work your way into it, you realize you're now in total darkness and your heart is getting hardened. On the psychological end, both the mother as well as the doctor knows that this is human life, that if the woman doesn't want it, it is ended. And then if it's going to be used, it ends up being frozen, as if in the IVF industry. And it's really seen as a sexually transmitted disease if you're contracepting. You don't want it. It needs to be prevented. So psychologically, there's that brutal fracture what should be unconditionally loved and cared for and do no harm. And then the spiritual piece comes in, that this is you're collaborating with God in the generation of a eternal individual human life, which, you know, we talk about in the theology of the body and the Catholic teaching. And you realize that you're ending that. And so the brutality is so real. That's why so many ex-abortionists come into the Christian Catholic community. And I think Our Lady of Guadalupe is just this living message of love, hope, and mercy. You know, we talk about the miraculous image, and there's no paint, there's no brushstrokes. It's endured since 1531. And yet, right there in that image that's waiting for us in Mexico City, where it was waiting for me, you know, there are symbols on her cloak about the divinity and just the incredible nature of the fact that it's right over the womb, this four-petal flower that is representative of divine life. We have had gynecologists examine the image, and her abdomen is a little distended towards the right side, which is very similar to a woman almost ready to give birth. And because she's there as a living image of a mother with child, it was just a great healing reminder. And our Catholic teaching has been so helpful, both on the theological end, but also on the psychological end of human formation, that we do have healing in Christ. And that we do have an advocate in the mother of life, because it was at Guadalupe where she said, Juanito, you know, Juan Diego was worried about his sick uncle. He was worried about him dying. And there she met him. Oh, little Juanito, do not fear any illness, vexation, anxiety, or pain. That's what we deal with in a holistic, integrated approach to healthcare, to medicine, illness, vexations, anxieties, and pains. Am I not your mother? Are you not in the crossing of my arms? Are you not in my heart? Are you not in the folds of my mantle? Aren't you in my womb to be rebirthed? Have I not been your fountain? Am I not the mother of the fountain of life? That's what she said to him. And that's what she continues to say to us. There's a lot of hope and mercy and love when people come back to the Catholic Church and experience, because I can tell you that when I had my experience that began internally, where I saw my life pass before me, and I realized what I had done, and my heart was getting hardened, but God's mercy is there for all of us. These sins can be forgiven if we repent and turn over. And she was in my internal engagement was, go show you, after be the best doctor you can be, you need to see the underserved next to the served, as well as you need to follow the teachings of my son's church in scripture and tradition. And oh, by the way, when you leave me, go show yourself to the priest for confession. Sacraments are real, Marcus. The church has real depth, psychological. They care about those negative thoughts, those memories, the trauma, capital T, little t, for all of us who've been affected by this brutality over fertility, not collaborating, cooperating, and working with, struggling through, being with compassionately with my patients, with our family, with our friends, with ourselves, psychologically, spiritually, and medically, the sacrament of the body, how we can care for the wounds we have in all those areas. The Catholic Church has been a great source over the millennia of being excellent in the sciences, excellent in reason, excellent in the life of the spirit, how to pray, how to be little, whether it's Avila or whether it's Lisieux, or whether it's Mother Teresa of Calcutta, how to serve. the church has real patience and love, and it's just waiting for anyone in your audience who's been suffering in this way. I know on the medical end, people can contact me, but and many others, but I can tell you that come home to the faith, receive the sacraments where you will feel the mercy and love of Jesus Christ. And always it's through the intercession of his mother, who we're anticipating that light in the darkness during this time of Advent that you know, John the Baptist talked about, Isaiah talks about, and that we're going to experience in a few weeks here as we approach the incarnational birth of Jesus.
John, that was truly beautiful. And so we're coming to the end of this segment. I want to invite you to share, how can people get in touch with you and the good work you're doing?
Oh, sure. They can contact myself at info@divinemercycare.org. That's one word. Or they can contact Dr. D.R.J. Bruchalski, B-R-U-C-H-A-L-S-K-I, at divinemercycare.org. And it's been a part of the ministry for 30-plus years as a member of the CMA and the CMDA and the American Association of Pro-Life OBGYN. There's a lot of resources here to help, and I would be happy to serve in that capacity.
Thank you so much, John, for your time. This was delightful. My guest has been Dr. John Bruchalski, author of Two Patients, My Conversion from Abortion to Life-Affirming Medicine, an OBGYN who is now fighting for life in the womb. His story is wonderful. Get in touch with him and let's fight for life in the womb together. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Ever get asked one of those tough questions, like, do Catholics worship Mary? And in that moment, you freeze? Truthfully, the Catholic AI app gives you answers in seconds rooted in scripture, tradition, and the magisterium. Whether you're navigating a tough conversation, deepening your faith, or looking for daily spiritual guidance, Truthly helps you know, live, and defend the Catholic faith. Truthly can be found in the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's Truthly, T-R-U-T-H-L-Y.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
Hi, I'm Angie. Did you know a billboard can save a baby's life? It's true. You can make a difference this holiday by helping us spread the pro-life message to reach those who are struggling with an unplanned pregnancy. Our billboards and ads feature our 800 hotline for help, which connects people to pro-life centers nationwide that can assist with free medical help, baby supplies, and more. Won't you join us in this season of giving? Please make a gift today. Visit ProLifeAcrossAmerica.org. That's ProLifeAcrossAmerica.org.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
We just did our parish mission a couple weeks ago now, and I suggested that in the course of the mission that we do something like a little mini spiritual assessment of our lives. I don't have to show this to anybody, but a great chance for us just to, with real honesty, just between us and Jesus, ask ourselves some questions. First question, given the fact that half of Catholics don't think God is even personal, would be to ask ourselves that. Do I think God is personal? And then to ask myself, do I think a relationship with Jesus is possible? Do I have a relationship with Jesus? And if so, what's it look like? And then perhaps a little bit more awkwardly or painfully, to ask Jesus, from his perspective, what's the friendship that we have with him look like? How would he describe our friendship with him?
That might be a hard conversation to have.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
He's not on drugs. Parents will come into my office and describe a litany of trouble about this long. Then they'll say this: I'm giving you the wrong impression. Overall, he's a pretty good kid. How so? Well, he's not on drugs or anything like that. One of the new moral high bars out there: he's not on drugs. You want to raise a child not with the absence of pathology, but with the presence of virtue. She's miserable with me, but she treats everybody else great. Again, not the absence of bad behavior, but the presence of good behavior. He's not on drugs? It's a rationale. May provide some comfort. It's not a path to virtue.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. Jacques Maritain was regarded as one of the most prominent Catholic intellectuals during his lifetime. He was a spokesperson for the Thomistic revival and therefore the Neo-Thomistic movements that have come about. His philosophy was also essential in the development of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. The anniversary of its adoption was just a few days ago. We look at his thought with Jason West. Jason is a professor of philosophy at Newman Theological College in Edmonton, Canada. Jason, great to speak with you. How are you?
Wonderful. Thanks. Thanks for having me on, Marcus. It's great to talk to you.
Well, I'm really glad to be able to connect with you. And I think it's important we begin by, kudos to the great work that Newman Theological College is doing up there in Edmonton. I've followed your work for a while now. And I just want to invite you to speak to that, the kind of cultural impact that Newman is having there.
Oh, thank you. It's a wonderful place. I was, until recently, I was president here for 12 years. I've now returned to the classroom. And we work very closely with St. Joseph Seminary, which prepares men for the priesthood for Western Canada, from Manitoba to British Columbia, so about half of our country geographically, a little less than half, but quite a dozen or so dioceses. So we work in that area with formation of priests. We also work with our Catholic teachers on religious education and helping prepare them for leadership roles, which is quite significant in our area. We actually have publicly funded Catholic schools. So our Catholic education system is quite significant. It's about a third of the population that we are helping to prepare teachers for their responsibilities in passing on the Catholic faith to our children.
Which leads us, therefore, to the work of people like Jacques Maritain, which informs your own thought and work. Could you please tell us about the historical milieu, the theological world that Jacques Maritain was living in when he started his teaching?
Sure. He begins really in the early part of the 20th century. As a student, he and his wife were at the University Sorbonne in Paris, and were very disillusioned as young people. They didn't come from a Catholic background. His wife was sort of nominally Jewish, Russian immigrant. He was from a secular, sort of loosely Protestant background. And they were really dissatisfied with the education that they were receiving at the university. They longed for truth, and their professors found that kind of naive. Raisa, in her memoirs, mentions her professors and says that, for them, the very name of truth was unlovely. They could only speak it between the quotation marks of a disillusioned smile. So they were so disillusioned that they decide to make a pact that if they can't find truth, they would commit suicide together in a year. And during that time, happily, they found some professors who were a bit more serious, as well as other intellectual figures outside of the academy, and become Catholic and discover Aquinas and and begin to try to apply Aquinas's thought to the problems that they had found in the academic world. And these problems, of course, are still very much with us.
Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate that, because that creates a context for us to understand why Jacques Maritain was so influential. Can you tell us about the decline of natural law reasoning during that period of history?
Yeah, certainly. I think historically there's certainly a move, particularly in the 19th century, even earlier with figures like Locke and so forth, where there's a change in what we mean by natural law from the law that God has written in our hearts to something that's much more focused on a kind of social contract or an agreement that sees our political life based on a kind of rational agreement amongst the citizens without a basis in our human nature. And in the 19th century, this really explodes with utilitarianism in the English-speaking world, a focus on the right political life is one that ensures the most pleasure over pain for everybody affected, which is a pretty minimalist account and fairly subjective, because we take pleasures and pains in different things. So this begins to, over a very long period of centuries, really erodes our thinking about our moral and social lives. And I think Maritain himself saw the consequences of that in really coming most notably in the First and Second World War. During the 19th century, there was this view that history was progressing towards some great culmination. Things were always getting better. And as religion was receding, the secular world was progressing and was going to eliminate conflict. And the sad truth of it was the opposite. We had a century of bloodshed in two major world wars. And so I think that was a big impetus for him in seeing the need to have a basis for our moral and political life in the natural law, and to see, which brings us to this question of rights and why he thinks rights, although they to some degree come from that liberal tradition that he's critical of, are also have important insights that we need to benefit from as well.
And I guess even before we talk about the whole question of rights and the liberal tradition, he pioneers in some sense, or at least popularized, this movement called existential Thomism. Those are big words. Can you help our listeners understand what that means?
Yeah, sure. So in philosophy, philosophers like to talk about the nature of things, getting to the most deepest roots of things. And we want to find truths, and this is in the broader tradition, we want to find truths that are necessary and certain. This goes back to Plato. Plato says you can only know things that are unchanging, eternal, and necessary, things that are like physical stuff around us. You can really only have beliefs about, because it's common, it's always changing on us. So, it's not really stable for us to know. And so there is within that, this tendency to want to focus on the nature of things. And what Maritain and existential Thomas find in Aquinas is this real focus on the gift and generosity of existence, that you need to really begin with the reality of things. And this flies in the face of a lot of modern philosophy, which wants to begin within the individual subject, within our own subjective impressions, because these are most immediate to us. And the problem with that is, if you begin with subjective impressions, it's very hard to show how you can ever get back to knowing anything about reality around you, about objectivity. Whereas if you start with reality imposing itself on us, then you can make sense of the inner life, and St. Thomas Aquinas, St. Augustine, the whole tradition has a rich reflection on the inner life of the human being and our will and our mind. So it's this focus on reality, which is really at the heart of existential Thomism. I kind of like the term Thomist realism. It's a little less intimidating. and it also doesn't lead to potential confusions with the kind of existentialism in secular philosophy in Germany and France, which is really focused on a different set of issues about the human will and trying to reframe reality in light of the will. It's almost an opposite movement.
I'm talking with Dr. Jason West, Professor of Philosophy at Newman Theological College in Edmonton, Canada. He's also the author of The Christian Philosophy of Jacques Maritain, published by Catholic University America Press. This is a really good book. It's a good read that presents the contribution of Jacques Maritain in terms of Christian philosophy and how it can be applied to Christian life. Continuing on the other side, stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Ever get asked one of those tough questions, like, do Catholics worship Mary? And in that moment, you freeze? Truthfully, the Catholic AI app gives you answers in seconds rooted in scripture, tradition, and the magisterium. Whether you're navigating a tough conversation, deepening your faith, or looking for daily spiritual guidance, Truthfully helps you know, live, and defend the Catholic faith. Truthfully can be found in the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's Truthfully, Truthly.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria Florida, a big kind of small town, where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at avemaria.com. That's avemaria.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Remember the time I said on the air, go to confession. And when you're done, go out and have a big ice cream soda. Celebrate. And a man wrote to me, he says, you know, I hadn't gone to confession in 30 years. Do you mind if I went and had a pizza? I said, oh, have 20 pizzas.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Sin creates a proclivity to sin, the Catholic Catechism teaches. It develops vice by repetition of the same wrong act. Thus, sin tends to reinforce and reproduce itself. Vice can be linked to the capital sins, which are called capital because they can engender other sins and other vices. The capital sins are pride, avarice, envy, wrath, lust, gluttony, and sloth. Sin is a personal act, but we can also be responsible for the sins of others under certain conditions. Sin can make men accomplices of one another, the Catechism warns, causing concupiscence, violence, and injustice to reign among them. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Steve and Janet Ray here, announcing we are back in the Holy Land, ready to introduce you to our favorite places in the world, the land where God walked. Mass at the most holy sites, pray the mysteries of the rosary where they happened, and experience the Bible in vivid color. We have led over 100 groups through this land, sharing the whole story of salvation. Of all the pilgrimages in all of the world, this is the one you should not miss.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at AveMariaRadio.net.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Feet. I'm talking with Dr. Jason West, Professor of Philosophy at Newman Theological College in Edmonton, Canada. We're talking about the Christian philosophy of Jacques Maritain. Jason, to pick up on what you had said earlier about Thomistic realism, I'd like to ask if you could share how Jacques Maritain's approach to philosophy was an attempt to have an applied philosophical paradigm rather than a purely abstract one. And this is not knocking abstract theological philosophical systems, but this was his approach. This was his attempt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in many areas. So this is one of the things, you know, that's unique, I think, about his thought in the 20th century is, you know, he writes several books on almost everything, whether it's science, religion, politics, ethics, and so forth. So, and it's all animated by this idea of a kind of realist view of the world, and stemming from the idea that the very our very existence and the existence of everything is ultimately God's gift, and so there's a certain generosity and goodness in reality in all of its dimensions, and so he wants to have a philosophy first of all, you know, that can be lived, and this is really vital, and so he's really concerned about the role of society in our social and moral life. He gets involved in this initially with concerns about the church and the state, then particularly as well with the Second World War, which he spends in the United States, and is very involved in making radio broadcasts, publishing pamphlets, getting European scholars who are under persecution from fascist governments to come to the United States and contribute to the universities there as academics. And so he's very involved in that whole political movement during the Second World War. And there is always this focus on that practical order from that time in his life onwards. And here he's particularly important in helping to distinguish more clearly than our tradition had done before between the supernatural order and the temporally world order of government and the relationship between the church and the political state. He helps distinguish those, you know, quite clearly, and also show, you know, how the church has an indirect responsibility for temporal things because some of those things matter to our supernatural life. And so it doesn't have a direct responsibility for political matters in the way that some of the earlier medieval theologians had thought, but it does have a rich, important role, you know, to comment on and help direct our life in the temporal order. But really, the temporal order has its own structure, and so political governments have the responsibility in that sphere. And we as Christians, what was particularly important, I think, that he contributed was the sense that we as Christians, in virtue of our faith and our baptism, need to carry out a Christian mission in the midst of the world, in the midst of that social temporal order, in our ordinary family life, and our contribution to our political life as citizens, that we bring our faith to bear upon that through our own free initiative, that we don't have to wait for, you know, our parish priest or our bishop to organize us, but we have a responsibility as Christians to bring that faith directly. Again, we often do that in collaboration with the priest and the bishop, but before it tended to be a more passive sense that the Catholic should wait for the guidance and direction.
Because of all this, one of the things that I like thinking about in terms of Jacques Maritain is that, sure, he was a philosopher for his time, but also his method is very approachable to our time. He shows that philosophy ought to be the work of anyone who professes faith in Christ.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. In fact, it's inevitably the work of everyone, I would say, in his view, that the kinds of questions that we deal with, even in an everyday sense, I mean, one of his most deep and profound essays on the moral life, you know, begins with the example of a child deciding for the first time to make a moral decision. You know, do I take the cookies or do I not? you know, and when they arrive at the point of making it, because they realize that it would be wrong to do so rather than a fear of punishment, you know, that moment when they make that first free choice for the good, which he sees as a free choice for God, even if the child isn't thinking about it in terms of God or religion. So, yeah, I think that's really important.
Because of that, too, when looking at your chapter on his epistemology, I want to ask if you could help share how Jacques Maritain exhorts us to think rightly about truth. Because we have to admit that a big issue that we're facing in the culture right now is a logical crisis. People don't know how to mm-hmm. ascertain truth rightly.
Right. Yes. And this is certainly critical. This was the source of one of his, or the topic of one of his biggest and most important books, Degrees of Knowledge. And he writes on this all the way through his life. One of his last books, The Peasant of Gerome, where he reflects on the Second Vatican Council, begins with a reflection on truth. And he actually pulls out from the Gospels a series of quotations about truth and puts them all in order and then has a sustained contemplation of them. And so this is vital. He's very clear there that, you know, it's utterly impossible to be a Christian and be a relativist, you know, to think that the truth is just whatever you want it to be, or that it's relative to your own particular circumstance. And I think he's utterly right about that. So here, and this is again part of Aquinas's great insight, is to see that all these fundamental principles of reality, existence, goodness, truth, unity, beauty, are all in reality fundamentally the same thing. We have to use different concepts and words for them because of the limitations of our mind and our intellect. But in reality, whatever exists is good. It is true because it is. That's why we can say, you know, something that exists, that it is the way that it is. Whatever is true of it follows from its reality. And so all those grand, you know, abstract principles, you know, coalesce and come together. And this is, you know, a major challenge to most philosophical schools of thought that you encounter in you know, the average university or college, where there's really an attack on nature, right? On the idea that we exist as human beings with certain limitations because of the type of thing that we are, and we have to bring our mind and our will into conformity with reality. There's a tendency, particularly because of our technological advances, a tendency to think that we can shape reality in our own image and make it whatever we want it to be.
From there, then, can you also talk about how he addresses the hierarchy of knowledge or hierarchy of truth, that some facts, some truths, some knowledge are subservient to higher ones, and we need to even learn that so that we can think rightly.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, here I think that, you know, the most direct way into that question is to see that, you know, some things we want to know simply for their own sake. Other things we want to know for the sake of what we can do. Right? Nobody takes a course in auto mechanics simply to memorize the car manual. and how it works. Like, the person who does that and never opens the hood of the car is a very poor mechanic. Right? They can't do anything with it. But other types of knowledge are desirable simply because we want to behold or contemplate that truth. And this is the kind of truth that our community and our culture has lost sight of. As a philosophy student, as any philosophy student knows, the first question you get asked at any get-together or party is, well, what are you going to do with that? As though you seek wisdom to earn a paycheck, rather than earn a paycheck to have the leisure to seek wisdom. It's a complete inversion of priorities, right? And so he thinks that philosophy has, in a certain sense, he says it's a useless truth, mm-hmm. but not because it's trivial or unimportant, because it's so important. There's nothing more important that you could put it to use to attain, to know God, as we, the philosopher and the theologian, if they're doing their job, are trying to do, is not something that you do primarily to earn a paycheck or to keep the lights on.
I wish we could continue. We're practically out of time now, and mm-hmm. We barely scratched the surface. I wanted to touch on his political philosophy as well. But Jason, how can people reach out to you and find out more about your work and this book?
Oh, sure. Probably at our college website, Newman, newman.edu. I'm in the faculty listing. I have a page there, and they can get my email. They can email me there.
Well, thank you so much, Jason, for making the time to talk with us about Jacques Maritain.
Oh, thank you. It's a delight to be able to talk to you.
My guest has been Dr. Jason West. He is a professor of philosophy at Newman Theological College in Edmonton, Canada. It's an outstanding institution in its own regard. And Jason has penned a book called The Christian Philosophy of Jacques Maritain, published by CUA Press.
That cultural and ethnic and even racial pride, which makes